So I'm Dr. Kimberly Campanello, and I'm the program leader for the BA English Lit with Creative Writing program in the School of English at the University of Leeds. And I edit an annual anthology called Tenterhook, which features work from students on the course. So every student on our course will have a piece of work per year that appears in this anthology. And it has an ISBN number, it's collected by the Special Collections in the Brotherton Library, it's circulated digitally and in print, and it really gives students a chance to get the feel for what seeing their work in print publication is like. And the great thing is it's also produced to beautiful standard by my colleague, Dr. Brett Greatley-Hirsch, who is a scholar of textual editing, and so he brings that expertise to bear when he puts together the anthology. And the name Tenterhook actually comes from the Leeds cloth making background. So Leeds has a long history of cloth making, and tenters were actually wooden frames that were located all along the River Aire and were where cloth would be hanging on tenter hooks so that it could be dried. And so when I was thinking of an appropriate title for this anthology that would kind of endure, but also evoke the sense that we get when we read something, we want to be on tenter hooks, we want to be surprised, we want to know where things will be going. That's why I chose this as the title. And I think readers of the anthology will find a huge array of student talent and formal approaches. So various genres, poetry, memoir, short fiction, longer prose narratives, and even script writing for stage and screen. So it's a real variety of pieces of work with loads of different thematic and aesthetic approaches from the students on the course.
Excerpt from Small Steps. Read and written by Lena Panayotova. The lamp in the town of X was starting to dim its red hue as 70101 was returning from his shift. 70101 never strayed away from his routine. He woke up when the alarm of the town went off, brushed his teeth with his red toothbrush with its red tufts, washed his face with red soap, and then dried it with a red towel. The people in the town of X didn't have a beard or any body hair of that sort, so no one shaved. After not shaving, 70101 would open his breakfast smoothie bottle. He didn't know what was in it, but he never wondered. The smoothies were blunt and tasted like a soggy red carton. They contained the exact daily intake of calories one had to take to maintain weight to the gram. After drinking his breakfast, he went to work, where he remained until the second sirens were heard. Then everyone would get back to their rooms, drink their dinner, and sleep. It was how it was and how it would always be. Not that people in X ever thought about the future. They did not have concepts we have, like time, and with time, notions of past, present, and future. Nor did they have such things as feelings, dreams, or family. The population of X knew everything they needed to know about how to live their lives, and they got that information by entering into the town as toddlers. The toddlers were raised in nurseries. The number of children who appeared in X was equal to the number of people who died. With every passing stage of a child's life, different responsibilities came. Once they were taught how to write, they started keeping a report book of what they had been doing until they went to bed. The next stage would be for them to be divided into categories at random. At random because they were all the same, and there was no way of finding a difference between the children, not even in their appearance, since they all had whitish blonde hair, milky translucent skin through which one can study the blood vessels in the human body, and dull, great eyes. Their heads were bald and had no bumps on them. There was not a single flaw on their bony bodies. Once children were put into a category, it would be made known what their job would be for the rest of their lives, which were not long by any means. They would start observing how the job is done, then at some point would be given small roles to carry out and get used to. And that cycle was repeated. People didn't know how it started, but no one asked. The only proof of the beginning of everything was displayed on the only nursery in the town, which also served as a crematorium. It was a scripture on one of the three walls which said, "You do not belong to anyone. You do not need. You do not ask questions." And that is true. People living in X had never had nor felt what we feel or have. They did not have art. Their ears had never heard a melody different from the sirens that howled red on two occasions per day. Once when they were asleep and had to wake up, and once when they were working and had to go home. They had never seen text other than the dictionary, the nursery wall text, and the newspaper. Xenians only had one newspaper, and in that newspaper there was no news, but only the numbers of how many things had been manufactured that day. Every day, the numbers varied, but never by more or less than 100. One day, there would be 200 pairs of shoes manufactured. The next, there would be 300. The next would be 400. The next would be 300. The next would be 400, and so on. People scanned this newspaper when they were riding the train on their way to work. It had always been that way, and no one knew that they could not read it if they did not want to. However, of course, they did not want or not want anything. Another thing people of X were able to read was the dictionary. It was not manufactured along with the newspaper, since there was a certain number of dictionaries distributed among people, and there was never a shortage or excess of dictionaries in the town of X. It had exactly 5,000 words in it, most of them being nouns, which were divided in different categories relating to one's job. However, no one had read the dictionary. People knew the words they needed and needed only the words they knew.
Punctured Moon Balloon, written and read by Sarah Healy. He must be late tonight. By now we should be traipsing through fairy light, swimming through pools of stars and dancing with the jellyfish. Where is my moon balloon? Take me to those dancing ribbons of light. Let me dodge mushroom skyscrapers and ride on the back of golden lions. Feed me fruits and let me see those dripping sunsets that taste like syrup. Heavy and weighted, yet stimulated. Sweat beads gather in constellations on my head. Where is he? Where is he? Perhaps he is lost in the peppermint woods where dark treacle seeps in his boots. Perhaps he has left me for insomnia, barring me from entering the delights of slumber. In the midst of painting my own universe, crafting the sugar snap grass and icing the stars, I feel a grasp. It's not the gentle stroke that I am used to, but a sticky, bony hand that clutches tight. Dark marble replaces magenta skies and cement clogs my insides. I am paralyzed. Giant beetles lick the humid air and fire breathes down my spine. I wake, my only company singed sweat, stale sheets, and a punctured moon balloon lying motionless on the floor.
The Utopian Manifesto, written and read by Tiago Ventura. Step 1. Remove every single book ever written and replace it with copies of this guide. Step 2. Erase every religion's symbols and abolish religious beliefs in the world, replaced with steps of the guide. Step 3. Remove every painting, expunge every color, replaced with equal amounts of black and white. Step 4. Silence every musical piece ever made and replace with monotonous sound waves. Step 5. Obliterate all technology, paper, and writing materials from existence and replace with printed copies of this guide. Step 6. Quash all ideologies, political parties, and governments and substitute with the rules of this guide. Step 7. Forget all cultural traditions and customs. Turn instead to these guidelines. Step 8. eradicate all social rules and notions of family or identity and replace them for a single unified identity, human. Step 9, efface every language in existence and replace them with a new language made from only this guide's words. Step 10, destroy this guide.
Tenancy, written and read by Beth Summerfield. The missing chunk of plaster, sandstone peeking through, rough texture encircled by painted purple faded now to blue. Like newspaper headlines of the 1980s whispering beyond laminate graves, each creak of a floorboard or tiny indent where a picture frame once waved. See the crumbs of hacked cement speak of bike handles pushed too hard, and the layers of shades of lilac tell of home-based hue swatch cards. The prints of ink you never read share stories you cannot hear, their voices stepped on, painted over, filled in by a trowel smear. So carve your name in the bookcase with your toothpick expertise. Leave the atlas of your fingerprints mapped upon the mantelpiece. Before you unwind the metal ring to set your trinket free, be sure to sign the guest book before handing back the keys.
We gaze through the same eyes, you and I, written and read by Philippa Kennedy. Two fists boring into his face repeatedly. Dinner time was always met with Mum's protests that Christian should stop rubbing his eyes. Was it a nervous twitch, perhaps? Or was there some kind of itch deep within his skull that two fists couldn't quite reach? It was continuous. We learned that if we saw him doing it, we were to pull at the fists and tell him to stop. He learned that it was best to rub his eyes in the shower or in the privacy of his room, avoiding dinner times and family events. His bloodshot eyes always gave away that the rubbing hadn't stopped, but as long as he didn't actively do it in front of us, there was little we could do to stop it. January rolled around and Christian's surgery was booked in. It's better to do both eyes at once, the doctor reasoned, and it was only after that we understood why. Being completely conscious while needles were inserted into your unblinking eyeballs is not an experience anyone would willingly submit themselves to more than once. Many, not at all, if they knew the true extent of the surgery. But going blind seemed reason enough to go through with the doctor's experimental treatment. Remortgaging the house wasn't even talked about when the NHS waiting time was revealed to my parents. It was done. In the time it took for 200 elderly patients to have their cataracts removed, my 17-year-old brother would go blind, not partially or slightly or a bit. Blind. I remember laying on my mum's bed in the aftermath, the curtains pulled tightly closed, and my brother swaddled in a duvet like a newborn. The record player was to the left of the bed, continuously churning out Tracy Chapman, until my main memory of the entire event was clouded in the lyrics of Fast Car and Behind the Wall. In that week, there were a lot of screaming, and then there was a lot of drug-induced hallucinations where my brother would have conversations with the other chairs in the room. Sometimes he tried to escape and be hauled back into bed by Dad, the door tightly pulled behind him and the curtains repositioned so that no light could enter the room. My main memory of that week is standing in the hallway, leading my little sister away from the hysterics and repeating over and over again that things would be okay till my voice intermingled with Chapman's to fill the space. And that's why we gazed through the same eyes, you and I. Years later, when I filled out the details for my provisional licence, a tab popped up to fill out a donor card. The initial page allows you to opt in and out for certain organs. The bulk of my body didn't really bother me. Why would I care if someone else had my kidney or a lung for my corpse? They seemed so inanimate and unfeeling within my body, as if they weren't really part of me, other than the basic function of keeping me. Yet when I scrolled down and corneas popped up, I paused. The feeling of giving away my perception seemed to be giving up a major part of who I was. Hazel eyes with flecks of gold that chose the littlest golden pup in the litter that licked my primary school hands and rosy cheeks with his big red lolloping tongue. All the eyes that fixed upon the baby doll cradled in my mum's arms as her pinkish lips erupted into a web and her porcelain skin bunched up around her own flecked hazel eyes. My memories were shrouded in sight and colour and light, and for you to receive that was with no knowledge of me, well, that was too much. You were asking too much of me. But in the back of my mind, haunting and plaguing me, was a thought that if Christian's surgery ever failed, he too would rely on someone giving up their own self-importance and ownership of flesh so that he, a 17-year-old boy, could see again. So forgive me for my reservation in passing my flesh to you, because you and I gaze through the same eyes of suffering. You are my brother, the person blinded by their own genetic default, and I am the one who retains no flesh of their own.